Welcome to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal profession. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. Well, this week we have a talk with Richard Tromans, who is, Richard, you're looking great from coming off a recent sabbatical.
Yeah, very relaxed.
And you've just jumped right back into your work there at Artificial Lawyer. So, Richard, thanks for taking time away from all this writing I'm sure that you're doing to talk with us here at The Geek in Review.
Yeah, and thank you, Greg. Thank you, Marlene. Yeah, it's already incredibly busy. I think I published 4 stories today. So Artificial Lawyer is back.
I think I've published 4 stories this year.
So I know. Pretty good. It's like now we feel bad.
So, Richard, the big question on everyone's mind is, what the heck does someone do for a year and a half on a sabbatical?
Yeah, we want to know.
Easy. It's easy, easy. Honestly, it feels like I've been away for about, if you told me I'd been away for 2 months, I would say that's kind of realistic. That's how it feels. Went really fast. I did a bit of traveling to California, obviously, as you'll hear a bit more about California later in the show. I've been writing a book, fiction, not about legal tech. Nice. I may write a book about legal tech. I've been asked several times by publishers to write a book about legal tech, and I may well.
Legal tech fiction?
I did actually think very, very early on, I did think about, hey, what about like John Grisham, but with legal tech? And then I then, no. I think it's an area conducive.
You'd rather go where there's an audience?
I bet there's an audience.
I don't know, like a legal engineer uncovers an incredible plot to subvert an NDA or something. I don't know. Who knows? Mm. But
got me on the edge of the seat.
Well, if you need editor, if you need proofreaders, just let us know.
I might take you up.
Yeah. So, Richard, since you went on sabbatical, it was November of 2022. You may have noticed there was a little bit of buzz around that time in regards to. This thing called generative AI. how have you been looking at the overall real effect that breakthrough in AI has made on the legal industry?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I was covering it before I went. So, for example, I think I was the first person to do a product walkthrough. I did it with ALTV of Spellbook, which is, very well known. But I did that in, I think, November 2022. I did an LLM study, about on PatentPal. There was a couple of pieces about LLMs in general. So it was kind of kicking off just before I left. And then as I went through the year, I was following it. But I think, the big insight that I had from being outside legal tech was just how different the appreciation of, or lack of appreciation of LLMs and generative AI in general is outside of a legal bubble. Inside the legal world, people are generally enthusiastic. I know there's a bit of reticence and a few people doing dumb things like doing case law research on ChatGPT, but let's think of those as outliers. Generally, amongst legal tech people, there's a lot of positivity. It's it's seen as a very powerful tool. It's very positive. Not a lot of negatives. People don't really think it's going to create the loss of jobs, and so forth. Outside of that, if you go to like California again, people there were striking for most of last year, in the world, creative world, the studio world, actors, designers, artists, voiceover people. I mean, it's going to have a really, really significant impact there. I mean, you've got all of this. It was a whole ton of stuff. But anyway, we're here to talk about legal tech and legal innovation. But I think the long and the short of it is, out in the big world, generative AI is going to cause a lot of good and a lot of bad. I think we've got to be honest about that. In the legal world, strangely, it seems to be mostly, I'd say 99% benign, once you take hype away and some of the pointless nihilistic criticism on the other side, which is just like a polar opposite of the hype, really. The general consensus is this is all going to be very positive. So I'm feeling pretty good about it. I'm feeling glad that I came back now, which perhaps is going to be your next question, because the last 12 months has just been a lot of hype and a lot of cynicism, which kind of cancels each other out, and actually very little substance, and a lot of law firm in-house, internal legal tech groups, innovation groups, they're only really now getting to grips with it and actually getting real outputs. So I don't think
that's what I was going to ask you on it.
I really don't think I missed anything.
You know, Marlene and I gave a presentation recently at the Houston Association of Law Libraries, and we kind of looked at the Gardner hype cycle and kind of looked at it and said, we're kind of dead right in the middle of the trough of disillusionment of the generative AI at the moment. And so, you know, as you've been kind of standing back and watching things unfold, are you actually seeing any actual transformation yet? Or are you still seeing everyone saying, well, there's a lot of potential here, but not a lot of action yet? Or are you seeing action?
It's starting. I mean, you know, I'm starting, and it really is starting. I mean, they're beginning the journey of integrating what an LM can do with other technology and building it into their work processes. And for me, I don't know if you read a couple of the articles that I wrote recently since I got back, generative AI has split the legal information atom. Now what? And the point of that article, and I'll send you the link, was basically to say, there's a lot of people shaving an hour or two off various work processes, you know, like doc review or, you know, helping to draft clauses, so forth, for contract generation. But what we're really lacking, and this is really the beginning of real change, is when people stop just thinking of it as like a little helper, you know, Santa's little helper, you know, GPT-4 of a little helper, and to start to think of it as something that they're going to integrate all the way through their business, all the way through the product lines, all the way through the production lines. So it's connected to the DMS, it's connected to all of your knowledge management capabilities, it's connected to all of your templates, it's connected to all of your precedents. You don't have to worry about prompting everything yourself, because all the system prompts and master prompts have been built in on so many layers and so many levels that a partner coming to a piece of work can just get straight into it. We're not there yet. And also, of course, part of that is pricing. You see, you can't divorce the tech from the economics. And bizarrely, actually, while I was away, I was asked to write part of a paper for Wolters Kluwer on that. And I made this point that, you know, legal technology has not transformed the legal world at all, except really in e-discovery, because the vast majority of legal activity has not adapted itself to the technology. You cannot have a transformational change via technology if the economic model is still that of the 19th century. They just don't go together. Mm. Interestingly, e-discovery moved really rapidly out of the law firms, out of the billable hour, into a very, very, very smart combination of people and technology. And it did that way before a lot of the AI stuff came along. They were out in front. They were real pioneers in that respect. And what we need is everything else to follow suit.
Yeah. And speaking of e-discovery, I've kind of been, and let me get your opinion on this. I've been a little bit shocked at how little the e-discovery companies have done to kind of take the technology and the processes that they've already set up over the years and not, I know that, Disco's doing part of that with their Cecilia. Servient is doing a really good job. I think from the two of them, I think Servient's probably doing more of a job trying to become more of an AI tool than an e-discovery tool, or at least a leader. Are you seeing anything? Are you kind of surprised by the lack of e-discovery not leading this?
Well, I mean, there are some interesting things, like Relativity is doing some interesting stuff, for example. But, I mean, perhaps it's partly because they were so out in front for so long, and it was such a tech-led area of the legal world, that they're so deeply embedded in in the way that they've been working, it's very hard to then just completely tear it down. For example, this is going completely off e-discovery.
That is true.
I was talking to a company that works in real estate document review. They spent 2 years using traditional natural language processing machine learning system, you know, the equivalent of Kira, but they were making their own version just for real estate documents. And they said they were just about to release, you know, this technology to the wider world. And then ChatGPT arrived, and then they saw the wider implications and they started digging into the technology. And they basically said, well, we've got to do it all over again now. Because the kinds of things that are going to be useful for the clients, like being able to ask generalistic questions in natural language, or even ask questions that are kind of very obtuse, like, you know, is there something I'm missing here? Like you can't with a traditional, you know, natural language NLP system, you can't type in bizarre questions, strange questions. You have to ask very, very clear questions. I mean, you have to train it up a little bit yourself to get the accuracy that you want. LLMs can do all the edge cases, the edge questions really, really nicely. And I think probably the answer is going to be a bit of a combination of the two. And I saw a bit of research a while ago on it. I think it was a law firm, and being like, maybe was it Sidley Austin? I can't remember. Was looking at uses for e-discovery. And they were just showing that a sort of combination of more traditional machine learning with an LLM approach combined really answered a lot of the questions.
I'm curious because you're talking about how we're going to integrate this into processes. Is this kind of a build situation or is this more of a buy situation? You know, I know that there are, you know, Microsoft is looking at things, but, you know, well, there's this concern about it touching things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Microsoft's interesting. I mean, I was talking to one head of innovation, and he was basically saying that Copilots, the Microsoft Copilots, even, you know, running through Azure or whatever, it just wasn't producing the kind of results that a lawyer would want. So, I mean, what most people are doing that I've seen, they're using a combination. So somebody might be using Harvey, Spellbook. They're running their own version of GPT-4, whether it's, you know, whatever the system they're using. And they're using all of these things in combination. And then also, I mean, there's so many barriers. I mean, people really haven't started connecting it properly to the DMS yet. And that's because there's worries over data security and things like that. But, you know, we will get there. We will get there. And then you start to bring in all the other tools. I mean, what we've got at the moment is a jigsaw. We've got a jigsaw of tools. And we're nowhere near yet bringing it all together into a coherent structure. It's interesting to see that I think Thomson Reuters, for example, and LexisNexis as well, are really trying to do this. They're really trying to thread all the pieces together. Ironically, though, even though this is a welcome move, you speak to a lot of legal tech people inside law firms, they'll say, we don't want just one system. We want to pick and choose. We want to customize. We want to build. We want to slot in the bits we want. So, well, let's see where that goes. But there has to ultimately, we have to redesign the processes. Just dropping a tool here and a tool there to kill an hour there, we're not going to break the standard model. The standard model is going to be with us forever. It's rather like, think of a coal-powered power station, right? You know, out in the Midwest, churning out smoke and everything, right? And they say, but we're really quite green. We've got this like little, you know, like windmill thing, you know, wind turbine on the top. But it doesn't change the overall structure. The structure is still massively inefficient. It's still burning billable hours, you might say, right? It's highly calorific legal work, but it's generating lots of negative side effects. So we're miles away from getting there. But I think people are starting to think about it. It seems inevitable. I mean, otherwise, as you know, I mentioned in that previous article, it's just going to become a legal tech fossil. It's going to become part of the legal tech fossil record, right? Which would be a tragedy. And it's going to be really weird because then what would happen is that legal tech would become like this kind of sad little island, and the rest of society would move on around it, getting better and better at using generative AI technology. And for us, we'd just be like, oh, well, we saved an hour on a due diligence exercise that was 2,000 hours long, which isn't going to get us anywhere. So I think it's almost forcing the law firms to rethink their processes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also curious, you know, there's a lot of talk about like prompting and how to tell the models what to do. And there's debate about that. Like people are saying, prompt engineers are going to be prevalent. There's other people saying that that's going to go away. But I mean, I feel at some, at some level, you're going to have, somewhere you're going to have expertise in how to make this work, whether you're in the background setting things up so that, front end users aren't going to have to think about it. Or if you're a front end user and you need to customize. And I'm thinking, where do you see that in terms of sort of moving in, in terms of like getting this more process oriented?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, it's got to be a front end back end scenario. There are always going to be some people who are hobbyists, in the same way that you can give a standardized NDA to most lawyers and they'll just accept it and say, I don't care, let's just get on with the deal because that's where the interesting work is. Other people would take the entire NDA apart and rewrite it word for word, right? And they're a small minority. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be the same stuff with prompting. I think the smarter firms, whether they're just bringing in external tools, which they can customize a bit, or they're completely building from the ground up using a GPT-4 base, something similar, they will do all the system prompting and the master prompting. And some of them will actually even get as far as actually refining as well on their own data through question and answer combinations to really sort of fine tune. But all of that should be on the back end, right? You want as little confusion as possible when you hand it to the clients or the internal client, in which case this is a partner or an associate. Good, because it's going to get really weird because you're going to have a situation where people are being expected to perform an action, which is part of a longer process with a degree of predictability and risk reduction. And then you'll have different people getting completely randomly different results because they're asking prompts in very different ways. So you want to try and narrow down the variability. You want to get maximum results, but you want to try and reduce that sort of crazy breadth of risk that you get with prompting at the moment. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? You just change like a few words in a prompt and you'll get a radically different response. So that can't last.
You don't have to change the words at all and you still get that different response.
that can't last. That can't, and legal can't do with that. It's a waste of time as well. It's a waste of time. Right. I mean, you've got a partner, whatever, who's billing out at $2,000 an hour or something, and she's wasted 30 minutes dropping in different prompts. So like they should just be like, I want this information. The tech team in the back has done all the prompting for you.
Got it. So I am very excited to say that in June, you have a Legal Innovators California conference going on in San Francisco. So it's a 2-day event. It focuses on law firms for day one and then in-house and legal ops for day two. So tell us what some of the themes are and some of the speakers, and who you're excited to have at the conference in California.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So yeah, Legal Innovators California, it's a US event in San Francisco, June 4th and 5th in the center. Tickets are on sale now. Speakers, we've got a fantastic bunch. On the in-house side, we've got Google, Meta, we've got Salesforce. From academia, we got people like Megan Maher from Stanford, who's a sort of renowned generative AI and AI expert. On the law firm side, we've got people like David Wang from Wilson Sonsini. We've got people from Auric. We've got Gunderson. We've got investors coming over because we're going to have a little bit of time talking about investments. And also we're going to encourage some of the smaller companies to sort of not exactly pitch to the investors, but do a presentation where they can probably get a bit of input and feedback from investors as well. So if you are a startup and you're listening to this, drop us a line. Let's see if we can get you in. I think there's going to be, in terms of the subjects, obviously generative AI is going to be central, isn't it? It's got to be. But also standardization. If what I would like to see actually ever takes place, it's not just going to be about productive forces. So productive forces like an LM, right? It has a huge productive impact on a process that you're trying to carry out. But you also need the infrastructure and you also need to shape the channels of activity. So we're going to need standardization. So not just on NDAs, but on sort of slightly more complex contracts as well. And we're going to need to think much, much more about the channels between law firms and clients, parties and counterparties. So there's a whole, the way I see it is that there's going to be like an entire new infrastructure architecture that needs to be built. And it's not that people weren't saying this before. There are plenty of people who've been saying this for years. I think what's happening now is that generative AI is effectively pushed just up to this point where they can't hold it back any longer. They've got to systematize things. They've got to think about things in a more logical way. This kind of ad hoc, well, it doesn't matter as long as I'm busy. As long as I'm billing, everything is good. And from the buy side, they're like, well, I don't really know what they do, and I don't really understand these items on the bill, but it looks big, and they're a famous brand. So, you know, I'm sure it's fine there. Yeah, I'll just pay it, you know, or I'll shave off 20% completely randomly. Hey, it's all cool. I mean, that seems like a bonkers way to run a market.
It's easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe, I don't know. Maybe
until millionaires are doing it wrong, though.
Well, exactly. But ultimately, this is the thing, isn't it? Is that what are legal services for? Legal services are not for lawyers. Legal services are to serve society and to serve the businesses within it, right? Amazingly, apparently, I read that somewhere. May not be right. I do think it could possibly be true. And so if that is true, then what are we all doing? We've got to think, you know, from the top down. You know, how are we running this sector for the benefit of everybody? Of course, you know, you get incentivized, but no one's going to tell me that a corporate lawyer is not incentivized already. And do you think in the world of fixed fees and LLMs and standardization, they're not going to be massively incentivized anyway? In fact, don't have the time to get into it here, but from the calculations that I've been doing the last few weeks, I've been creating financial models for using technology, well, AI primarily, automation and fixed fees, and mixes of associates and partners. And from what I can figure out so far, is that law firms are actually going to be more profitable using generative AI.
That makes sense.
Oh, we're going to have you back to talk about that.
Yeah, that's.
I'm sure people want to hear about that.
I'm a loss of lawyers on the sell side of the market. I don't see lawyers being lost because there is no point. On the buy side, I think we could see some losses, particularly around contract management. But on the sell side, I don't see. It's not in the law firm's interest to undermine their own earning power.
Yeah. Well, on the conference coming up in June, who's the audience that you're attracting for this one? And has the audience kind of shifted at all over the past couple of years? Who would be incentivized to come?
I think it's always been similar people. It's people. Well, I guess there's two core groups. You've got the group who are really in the thick of it, who are very much part of the innovation scene or the legal ops scene, and effectively they're coming along to meet their peers. Many of them will be living in California on the West Coast, or, you know, up in Washington State. All people will have flown over from the East Coast, also some people from the UK. And then I think there's a whole bunch of people who are just curious because, I mean, California is a huge market. It's a gigantic, gigantic economy. A lot of lawyers. I mean, I think it's the second biggest legal market after New York, I think. And there's a lot of people who are just going to be there to learn. And I think, I'm hoping that with all the interest in generative AI, that there'll be a lot of local lawyers, perhaps who are not experts in technology, who want to come along to listen to the experts from large companies, from leading law firms, etc. So I think it will be a mix.
And that's always cool because then it's great when you get to talk to people sort of with coming from different perspectives, and you know, it's always good to learn things that way. So
yeah, those have always been my most enjoyable meetings, is the ones where you know, there's a mix of law firm, there's a mix of in-house, there's a mix of vendor, there's, you know, the academic. That's where the real good conversations come in for me.
Exactly. But Richard, you also have a Legal Innovators London conference coming up in November. So you've announced in 2025, you're going to actually add a third day to the London conference, which will be a litigation day. So that focuses on disputes, on arbitration, e-discovery, case law research, and I guess other litigation tools and services. So what's the reasoning behind this new addition coming in?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's because I think it's probably fair to say that the litigation world, the transactional world, at least in the UK to some degree, but maybe it's because in the UK we have a split profession between barristers and solicitors. It's slightly different. The transactional world tends to dominate legal tech and discussions around legal innovation. And yet, certainly on a global level, definitely in the US, litigation is 50% of the market, definitely in America. In the UK, amongst the big law firms, it's still about maybe 30% of the big law firms' revenues. So I think it really needs something dedicated to it. And there's just so much to talk about. I mean, e-discovery, e-disclosure, as it's called in the UK, case law research, arbitration, you know, online disputes resolution. It just goes on. But it's such a massive subject. And I think by the time we get to 2025, generative AI will really have impacted that area a lot. And again, if you look at where a lot of people are talking about generative AI, it's transactional. It's like, help me to draft this contract, help me to review this contract, right. You know, help me to summarize this legislation so I can talk to my client about how we should draft this contract. It's very, very transactionally orientated. So I thought, you know, let's bring in the litigation side.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of pointed this out, even on the litigation side, it's transactional. It's about... like we had Damien on a little bit ago, and everything that he's doing is pulling out metadata, asking questions, organizing the information. So it's interesting, even within the litigation processes of it, that the AI tools seem to be very transactional.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, just one last point on that is how are we going to price it all up? That's going to be fascinating. On transactional work, there's a degree of, well, it's simpler. Because, you know, there is an end point that you know you're trying to get to. We want to complete this merger. Yeah, we'll do the due diligence. We'll, you know, argue out all the various aspects of the deal and so forth. And there is an end point. It, you know, there's a merger. It's all done. Boom. You can plan that. You can benchmark it. There are probably deals that are actually very, very similar. You know, so you can start to bring in fixed fees. You can start to see how tech and pricing and actual activity of the lawyers all kind of fit together. With litigation, it's totally, totally different, isn't it? Because you've got, in the US, you've got punitive damages. How do you predict those? I mean, that's going to be one aspect. I think there's been a lot of work up to now on using AI for predictive purposes. Mm-hmm. Where are we going to get in relation to using an LLM? So crunching huge amounts of data to make predictions. That's going to be interesting. I mean, and I think we've got some really interesting ethical issues. I mean, I think with contracts, I don't think the ethical issues get that bad. I mean, is it an ethical issue to use an LLM to redraft a change of control clause? Not really, as long as there's a lawyer there who's trained and regulated looking at it and going, okay, that's good. But should a lawyer who's in court or going to be in court use an LLM to draft their speech? Should a judge be asking an LLM, what do you think? Do you think he's guilty? You read the evidence the same as me. What do you think? You know,
and put the transcripts and video in, and you tell me.
I like him, you know. Leave him alone.
Okay. He seems nice. They seem nice.
Yeah, he's a nice
the future is...
He never... Yeah. But you know what I mean? Because also, I mean, you know, once we get into multimodal combinations, I mean, you know, you've got a video camera in the court. It's downloading all the images. Some person probably already has developed a way of doing some kind of emotional response analysis for defendants. You know, who knows where this is going to go? There's all kinds of interesting things.
Well, speaking of where things are going to go, it's time for our crystal ball question. So we'll have you pull out the crystal ball and peer into the future for us, Richard. And so what kind of change or challenge do you see for the legal industry, say, over the next 2 to 5 years?
Okay. Well,
that's a long time now.
Yeah, well, I would sum it up. And it's always the same challenge. It's always... The thing that I think we are about to do that have been instigated by the arrival of generative AI, we could have done 5 years ago. It would have been clunkier. The old machine learning systems were clunkier. Some of the automation systems and redrafting systems were clunkier. But we could have done it. We just didn't. There wasn't the impetus to do it. I think the big challenge, as ever, is will the clients finally say enough is enough and do a kind of like ontological leap out of their own reality and go, yeah, I was trained this way. I was trained to think this way. I was taught that time is the ultimate measure of value, which is ironic in an industry that's primarily intellectual product, which is kind of bizarre. You know, we're not like building bridges. We're actually, you know, expressing ourselves in intellectual terms. But anyway, if they can get out of that, if they can then think about repricing, if they can think about their own methods and then say, well, if we're starting to use technology more and more and more on our own contract management, when things get a bit more complex and they go out, can we do the same? Can we demand the same of our external lawyers? And then you just start to get this slow revolution. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily an evolution, because I actually think it is a revolution. A revolution is where something replaces something else, right? An evolution is where something kind of morphs into something else. I think this will be a revolution, but it's going to be a slow one. It's going to be a gentle revolution, right? And I think this is you know, the $700 billion, you know, $800 billion, whatever it is these days, legal market question. Will the clients and the law firm somehow get together and solve these big problems? Or are we going to be stuck in this kind of ad hoc manual labor, you know, high calorific legal activity kind of world forever? And like I say, and if that does happen, if we fail at this challenge, the rest of the technological world will go around us. We'll be like a vehicle stuck on the freeway, and all the other vehicles are going around it, right? And that would be very sad. So, and I don't think that will happen. I don't think the owners of the large companies, the CFOs, the CEOs, the investors, activist hedge funds, and so forth, will let that happen. Mm-hmm. They'll go down to the legal department and say, look, even if you don't want to change, you've got to change. Or actually, I know you do want to change. You just need a bit of moral support and a bit of air cover to say, this is cool. You can push back. We'll stand behind you. It's not always buy IBM and you'll never go wrong. You know, let's challenge some assumptions. But like I say, we might not. There is a real possibility that we come up to the fence and we back off. We don't jump. And at that point, like I say, the rest of the world will come around us.
Yep. Never underestimate our ability to screw up a really good situation.
Well, definitely great food for thought. So thank you, Richard Tromans, for talking with us today. Where can people find you and the Artificial Lawyer online?
Yeah, thanks. It's at, as always, artificiallawyer.com. And the conference, which is in San Francisco, June 4th and 5th, it's a very, very long but very, very simple .com. It is Legal Innovators California. It's about that long. But if you just type in Legal Innovators into Google, and then you'll probably see the one for California. And as mentioned, the tickets are now available.
Awesome.
Great.
And I'll make sure that we get the links on the show notes as well.
Great. And thanks to everyone, our audience, for listening to the Geek and Review podcast. We'd love to hear from you, so please find us on social media sites like LinkedIn. The music you hear every week is from Jerry David DeSica, and so we thank Jerry very much.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, Marley.
Thank you.